Good afternoon. Be seated, please.
This is the third of our oral arguments, three oral arguments this afternoon. This is the matter of Backman versus Gelbman, case 8986396. Let's see, Mr. Nobrega here for the appellant, Ms. Backman, and Ms. Dyer, too. Okay. All right, good to see you back here. And Ms. Stark for Mr. Gelbman, and also Mr. Ruiz. All right, thank you both. It's great to see this sort of participation from the bar in this type of case. It normally wouldn't attract probably a high-level counsel like the pro bono program does, so we really appreciate it. All right, there's some interesting issues here today, and of course, I'm Judge Gibbons, joined by Judge Bulla and Judge Westbrook. And anything else, Judge Bulla, before we start?
I just really appreciate you all being here and taking the time to handle a pro bono case. It's important to representation for many people who need it, so thank you.
Judge Westbrook?
I appreciate all of you for participating in this, the pro bono program. It is definitely very helpful to us.
And that air conditioning system is back on with the fans. So again, you have to speak up when that's going. All right, Mr. Rodriguez, do you want to go first? I assume you're arguing it. You sat here all afternoon. You're the only one that heard all three cases.
Yes, I will be arguing.
You want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, please, Your Honor. I'll reserve 2 minutes.
Okay, 2 minutes. All right, please proceed.
All right. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is William Nobrega, and I represent the appellant Hope Backman in this matter. The Nevada Supreme Court has long held that child custody determinations cannot be used as a sword to punish perceived parental misconduct. Today, the question before this court is whether child support determinations can be used by the district court as a sword to punish perceived parental misconduct. And the answer to that, Your Honors, is clearly no. The purpose of child support is to ensure that the child has the proper financial support that he or she needs in order to, you know, have support. In order to make sure that they had the support that the parent that they would have had if the parents would have remained together. I'd just like to give a little bit of brief factual background to kind of frame the reasons as to why we think the district court order needs to be reversed. Ms. Backman's a single mother. She's a self-employed house cleaner in Reno. She works for her family and friends and acquaintances, cleaning houses entirely on her own. For 7 years, Ms. Backman received around $800 a month in child support. This ironically ended when COVID-19 began. In November of 2019, the obligor, Mr. Gelbman, decided to voluntarily retire early from his job at the Carson City Fire Department at the age of 44 and sought a modification of his child support obligation as a result. In attempting to set the new obligation, despite having no issues in the prior hearings with establishing Ms. Backman's income, the district court determined that Ms. Backman's financial records for years prior were incomplete and it couldn't determine her income. And it found that she hadn't, and we dispute this in the record, but it found that she hadn't complied with its order as to which financial documents to provide. And as a result, the district court, in contradiction to the statutes and the case law, decided to impute Ms. Backman's income and say she could earn just as much as Mr. Gelbman can earn, even though he was drawing a pension benefit of $3,636 a month for doing absolutely nothing. He'd earned that money before, certainly, but he wasn't working anymore. He also had 5 to 9 rental properties where he was drawing income from during that time. And the district court said that they could, that Ms. Backman and Mr. Gelbman could earn the same amount of money. This is a punitory imputation. It's disallowed and foreign to Nevada law. After the imputation, Ms. Backman's financial situation grew more and more dire because that wasn't the amount of money she was actually making. And she moved to modify her child support. When she moved to modify her child support in the latest order, the one before this court, she was making between $600 to $800 a month. This is, by statute, a substantial change in income, mandating a review under Rivera. The district court again upheld its imputation as a punitory measure against Ms. Bachman and did not do the required analysis necessary under Rivera to deny the motion to modify child support.
Mr. Nobrega, do you agree that the earlier orders are not the orders that are under appeal starting with 2020?
Yes. So, and this is a good argument. I think that this is a good question, Your Honor. And I think that the answering brief kind of misconstrues what we're trying to say here. So if I could just situate us within the argument, but I do agree it's not under appeal, but I'll tell you why the imputation is still important. So our first point is this, and this is kind of goes to where your question is that the initial imputation is a punitory measure. And that by doing that imputation, while that 2020 order isn't under appeal, by continually denying the motions to modify, the district court is upholding an ongoing sanction. So it poisoned the proceedings going forward, where the district court's looking at Ms. Bachman's motions to modify. And instead of doing the proper analysis, he's saying, I didn't like her evidence before, so I'm going to continue to impute her income. But the imputations do not work like that under Nevada law. There's findings he has to make for the imputations. And each time the modification comes up, he has to do this analysis. And if he's going to affirm his imputation, he has to redo the imputation analysis as well. He has to make sure that Ms. Bachman is underemployed or unemployed without good cause. And then he's got to go through the factors that are in the Nevada Administrative Code. So the first point kind of leads into the second point, which is that during this 2023 hearing, the judge continues to uphold his imputation without doing the necessary Rivera analysis. So that's our second point. And then the third point would be that this ongoing imputation as a punishment to Ms. Bachman violates Nevada public policy.
Okay, so you're talking about the February 2023 hearing?
Correct.
So that's like the final one, and that's...
That's the order. Oh, excuse me, Your Honor. Chief. That's the order on appeal. Is that 2023 order?
Okay. And I think the record shows that the master denied it as there was no change of circumstance. So it just stopped right there. It never got any farther into the analysis. Was that a hearing that's envisioned under the rules to determine if modification is appropriate? Can you just stop right there and not apply what you normally would apply in a child support situation?
So the answer in this case is certainly no, Your Honor. You can't just stop and find there's no change in circumstances. And the reason why in this case that's the case is there's the statutory, in NRS Chapter 125B145, there's the statutory presumption that defines a substantial change in circumstances. And that's 20% or more. So in an ordinary case, if 20% or more wasn't in place, certainly you can find there's not a change in circumstances. You don't have to do the rest of the analysis. But for this case, it's a matter of statute, there is. And the court admitted that. The district attorney said that there's 14 exhibits filed in this case, and you can read them in the record. And there's more than a 20% change in circumstances since the hearing that they had. And the court said, well, that's fine, but child support is to be reviewed once every 3 years. A 20% change in income can be a basis for a hearing, but even then it's not a basis for modification. So the district court's confused here in this regard, that it's not necessarily a basis for modification, as your honors know. That's not necessarily the rule, but what he means by a hearing is not what occurred here. What a hearing is a substantive review under Rivera, where you look at what the base child support amount is, you establish what that should be under Wright v. Osborne when there's two parents working, and then you determine what that base amount is. And if you want to deviate from it, the district court certainly can, but then it has to go through those factors on the record and make findings of fact. And it goes so far in the district court. I mean, the district.
So let me just stop you there. If the master and then the district court were wrong about that, and the type of hearing that is necessary was not conducted, is that the end of the story for you? Regardless of what should have happened after that, what might have happened after that, you have to have the hearing and go through the full analysis that you're describing?
Yes, that's required under Nevada law, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Well, did she present enough information to justify that hearing? I mean, in the child custody context, we know what the standard is, and our court did an opinion on it not too long ago. In the child support, it's not clear about what exactly you have to present to establish your 20% change.
Right. So now we're going back, Your Honor, we're going back kind of to the first point here again with the imputation. So what the district court did was it said, I was unsatisfied with the amount of information provided before, so I'm going to impute her income. That's a punishment. That's a punitory imputation. It's not allowed in Nevada law. It's foreign to Nevada law. But let's look at what she provided prior when she was receiving about $800 a month. So in the 2014 hearing, she provided testimony. That's it. All she provided. The district court could determine her income. In the 2019 hearing, she provides an income verification form, financial disclosure form that they're required to provide in district court, and her testimony. At the third hearing, the district court orders her to provide certain documents because it wants to see more about her income. She provides Airbnb earning statements from when she cleaned the Airbnb. She provides 2018 tax returns, 2016 tax returns, 2014 tax returns, Wells Fargo statements, Venmo statements. She provides more income statements before the 2022 hearing. In the 2023 hearing, the one at issue, she provides more income statements for 2022. What she describes as profit and loss statements. Now, these aren't sophisticated things. My client doesn't have a big business. She's not a bookkeeper, but she put together what she made for the month. She provides evidence of her financial situation of not being able to pay rent, being behind on energy bills, being past due on her car payment, evidence of applying for different jobs and actively looking for more cleaning jobs because her cleaning jobs had decreased, and evidence of certain collection lawsuits. So certainly, and the interesting thing is if you look at the record, you can discern Ms. Bachman's income. You can get an idea of what her income is based on all this evidence. It's almost impossible to get a handle on what Mr. Geldman's income is in this matter. And I get that that's not before his court, but it's very interesting because Mr. Geldman makes a certain amount in his pension, so we can determine that, but he's never disclosed how much income he draws in from his 5 to 9 rental properties over the course of several years. And he only provides tax returns, and the tax returns he provides take up like 2 to 3 volumes in this record. So he clearly makes more than Ms. Bachman. That's undisputed. He doesn't work at all. He's retired at the age of 44, supporting 3 other children and this one. And with no doubt, it's not like he got a different house or anything. All the circumstances are the same, and he's able to support himself. But there's no evidence, you know, there's no way to discern from the record what Mr. Geldman's income is at all. So that's kind of telling. That kind of goes to that third point, the public policy.
But she has the burden to show the change of circumstance as to her income, and his income is a side issue.
Oh, yeah, no, certainly. And I don't dispute. She does have the burden of proof for the modification piece. But she's met that burden. The district attorney agreed that she met that burden and tried to explain it. And the district court said, I'm not hearing your argument. Like and I'm not sure if Your Honor saw this in the record, but he says, that's not changed circumstances. I'm sorry, this motion is denied. As she's trying to explain what the 20% change is and how there's evidence of it, he cuts her off completely and goes no further.
I just want to clarify one thing, because you've discussed what the district court was doing. But was it the hearing master that was making those decisions? So did Ms. Bachman ever object to any of the hearing master's recommendations to the district court judge? And specifically, did she object on the February 2023 hearing recommendation?
So on the 2023 recommendation, the district attorney objected to that. On Ms. Bachman's behalf, which is kind of unusual in this case because the district attorney saw that there was
an issue. Was an objection filed to the hearing master's recommendation, which was basically, I'm not doing anything. There's been no change of circumstance. That's what the February 2023 order basically said.
So there was an objection, and then the 2023 order is the district court looking at that objection and affirming the master's findings, and that's it, starting at JA 1631 is where that is. And the district court kind of says the same, like the district court says, you know, there's been multiple motions in this case. There's a pending child support motion. None of these things are actually with the analysis that had to
be. Did the district court conduct the hearing as the local rules require?
I don't think the district court conducted a hearing on this matter, Your Honor. No, I believe that the district court just issued this order, which is in Washoe a little bit more commonplace for them to issue orders and not hold hearings each time. I'm sorry. If there's no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
I have one quick question. Is the hearing master required under NRS 125B145 sub 4 to conduct a review whenever evidence is presented to suggest a 20% decrease, or is the review only triggered when the master finds, based on the evidence, a 20% decrease?
So I think that the master would have to find that there's a 20% increase or 20% change in income. So it has to be that finding made. But the court here, the master here, and again, I'm kind of conflating the two, but the master here actually did admit to that finding in the record. So he said, yes, I mean, because the district attorney says there's been a 20% change in income. He said, yes, I mean, she certainly lost her jobs. And so, yes, but that doesn't mandate me to do anything else but have this hearing, is what he said. So I think it does require some sort of finding of a 20% change in income. Yes. All right, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. When it might please the court, my name is Katrina Stark on behalf of Mr. Galvin, the respondent. So I would just like to refocus the court on the narrow issue that is on appeal here. And that is that the appellant failed to establish a change in circumstances between the order issued January 24th, 23, and her motion to modify that order and a motion for review of that order that she filed on February 7th, 2023. So the court was well within its discretion in affirming the courtmaster's findings and recommendations in refusing to review that order and modification. And that is under NRS 125B1454 and Rivero, which says, except where the appellant here can demonstrate a change in income of 20% or more, the decision to review the order based on a change in circumstances lies within the district court's discretion. And just briefly going to your question, Justice Westbrook, it is where a party can demonstrate a change of 20% or more. It's not merely a suggestion. It's not merely a, tell you right here, an indication, I think is what the district attorney said at the hearing. There's an indication that there's a 20% change in income. That's not good enough under the statute or the case law. It must be a demonstration of a change.
So the master just said there's no change of circumstance, but he didn't actually make a determination of what her income was. She had said she had lost employment, and the records that she submitted showed less than $1,000 a month in income, which is quite a bit different than what the other records show. So shouldn't the master at least have made a finding about what her income was and how it didn't satisfy the 20% rule so he could summarily deny this and not proceed with the full hearing?
He couldn't make such a finding, Your Honor, because all she had was a screenshot of some income, and I believe it was between August and October. I think it was only 3 months. It wasn't for the full year of 2022, and it only showed a few deposits and a couple of expenses. There was no tax returns. There was no bank account. There was none of the financial records that the court had repeatedly and the courtmaster had repeatedly requested for over the past 2 or 3 years.
Well, she submitted financial disclosures at several points in time using the Washoe County form.
She did, Your Honor, but they were fairly inaccurate. She didn't include her actual gross income. That was blank. All she put was a couple of expenses, and that was it. It was just nothing for the district court to go, not substantial evidence.
Why not just ask the simple question, did you lose your job? How many houses are you cleaning? How much money did you earn last month? What records do you have? And if you don't have other records, why don't you have them? I mean, it wouldn't have taken a whole lot to find out what her recent circumstances were. And it appears that both the district court and the master were tired of seeing her because she filed so many motions to modify. And that, so it's like, all right, here she is again. Let's move on, get her out of here as fast as we can. That, I mean, that's what it looks like. Now, may not be accurate, but could be viewed that way.
It appears that way, Your Honor, but I believe that that was based on the fact that it was the same argument over and over again, the same allegations. She came before the court. She said...
So I'm trying to understand, and I apologize for interrupting, but I'm trying to understand how Mr. Geldman goes from paying $831 a month to zero could be considered in the best interest of the child. How could that be considered in the best interest of the child?
Well, best interest of the child still has to be based on the parent's income as well. So if he, so it's the statutory percentage, which I believe is 16%. That still has to be based on his income if he's not earning enough income.
But it really wasn't based on his income, was it? Wasn't it based on the fact that the court imputed income to the mom, imputed income to Ms. Backman?
Well, it imputed her income to Ms. Backman, but it also found that Mr. Galman's income was lower than it had been, after his
retirement. He obviously retired, so circumstances had changed for him. But nonetheless, the master back in 2020 imputed the income to her that was the exact same as his without making any findings in 2020 as to how that could be the case. I mean, they obviously wouldn't have identical income. So that's what I think Mr. Nobrega is arguing, that original order infected all the proceedings after that because you have this imputed income that sort of, that I've never heard of that before. It just picks what the other person is making and said, that's what you're making too. So back to Judge Bolla's point. So, I mean, once you've done that, it's coming forward, and now the best interest of the child's never really being looked at because of what happened in 2020.
2 points on that, Your Honor. First of all, the court, or the master, imputed her income based on the fact that she had the potential to earn the same amount as Mr. Galvin because she had her own business. And I think prior, I'm sorry, I can't remember what year it was, but she had stated in a financial disclosure that she used to make $42,000 per year in her business, and that was the court's finding. Just one moment, please. And that's right, and actually, under Bonham, which is 136 Nevada 786, which is an unpublished Supreme Court appeal, in that case, the court imputed income to the father because he presented evidence that because of his degrees, he could earn between $50,000 and $114,000. So the court imputed income to him because of that earning potential. So the court was able to do that based on her earning potential.
But this wasn't imputing income to consider what amount she should be paying in child support. This was imputing income to determine the amount that Ms. Backman was not going to receive in child support. I mean, the imputation of the income to Ms. Backman had nothing to do with her having to pay child support, did it? It had everything to do with Mr. Geldman not having to pay her child support because now they're earning the same amount of money.
Not quite, because it was 50-50 custody. And so determining that she, that he did not have to pay child support to her, but she also did not have to pay child support to him because it's 50-50.
Well, he was paying child support, though, of $831 a month before the imputation of the income.
Because that was before he retired, which was that.
Right, and that's understandable. And I think the district attorney's office suggested a number like $233 a month, or I apologize, I'm probably misstating the number, but it was in that $200 a month range that he should now be responsible for in light of his retirement.
Suggested that, but again, the court has to base it on substantial evidence. I know that was just a suggestion by the district attorney.
Well, the court cut off the DA too and said, are you saying I made a wrong decision? And so the DA was like, well, I don't want to say that, but the DA still had said the number that Judge Bolla just mentioned. And so the DA looked at the records and said, there's a discrepancy because he makes more than her with the latest information. And if you could do the calculation with joint custody, he's going to pay her the $200+. And the master just totally blew that off and never made a finding whether that's true or not.
Well, that was not a 2020 hearing, Your Honor. That was
that may have been a 2022.
Recent hearing, yes. And the district attorney didn't say based on evidence. It just said there's a suggestion. There is a suggestion that there's been a 20% change in income. Not that Mr. Galvin makes more, but there's a 20% change in income here. There is a suggestion.
All right, Judge Westbrook has some
just
numbers.
Just a quick question. She testified at this hearing that she made between $600 and $800 a month. Testimony is evidence, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So why wouldn't her testimony as evidence be sufficient to at least trigger the court to make a finding about whether there was a 20% decrease? Because predating this hearing, the court continually imputed the same amount of income as Mr. Geldman. So wouldn't you be comparing her testimony with the amount that the court had previously imputed to demonstrate that change in circumstances?
Her motions to modify, well, that's a good opportunity to clarify. Her motions to modify were based on Mr. Galvin, often based on his circumstances. So she would file these motions to modify and she would say, Mr. Galvin now has sold a house. He has this rental income, et cetera. Then at the hearing, yes, she...
But those are prior ones. In her motion, she said, I've lost my job. I'm, you know, about to be homeless. And then she testified that she only was making $600 to $800, and that was sworn testimony. So why was that not enough to trigger at least an investigation into whether there was a 20% change?
Well, it's up to the district court and the courtmaster to assess credibility of a witness with evidence. And without documentation to back up what she was saying, I believe the court...
But the court did have some documentation, at least from the district attorney's office. And the number, just so it's clear in the record, that I have is $286 that Mr. Geldman should be paying to Ms. Backman for child support after considering all the factors involved. So wouldn't that be documentation and evidence the district court should have considered in determining whether or not additional payment should be made? Because at the time that the district court was hearing this, we were at zero. So Mr. Geldman wasn't paying anything. And then the district attorney's office found that he should be paying $286 a month, and the district court rejected that. Why wouldn't that not be sufficient evidence?
Because again, it was just a district court stating at the last hearing, Your Honor, we think the evidence suggested that there was a 20% change in income. And that's all the district attorney said. Didn't present the evidence, and the evidence the district attorney was talking about back then, a couple of documents. It was just simply, as I said before, a few numbers. It was just a number of an income and a couple of expenses, I believe, for laundry. So it just wasn't adequate, substantial evidence in order for...
Let's assume for a moment it was. What should have happened next? What should the master have done to find out if this is justified a change in the child support order? In other words, assuming there's a substantial change, what's next?
Next, then I believe it is the calculation that the district attorney does, and she did do it in a prior hearing. I believe it was the 2020 hearing when the zero payment was imputed.
The calculation then have answered the question of whether there was a substantial change? So you have a chicken and the egg. How can you say there's no substantial change until you've done the calculation?
Because a substantial change has to be based on sufficient evidence.
Well, it looks like looking at the court's statement in the record at JA 1575, the court says a motion for modification was filed on January 7th, 2 weeks later. The court recognizes that there are fluctuations in income, and in any event, she lost her job. I'm not seeing the basis for any sort of modification. That seems to be a finding that the court is crediting her testimony that she lost her job and is making less money. There is a fluctuation in income. So I'm not seeing that the court discredited her. why wasn't that finding enough to suggest that the court needed to conduct the review?
I understand, Your Honor, and I will go sort of change gears a little bit and say at that hearing, the order under consideration was the January 24th order. So appellant was actually required to show a change of circumstances from January 24th to this hearing. This wasn't about the 2020 0% imputation and the evidence that was supplied back then. It was this hearing.
So if she lost her job at some point in December after she testified, but before the court finalized its order and it was, or before the hearing master finalized its order and it was approved by the district court, your position is that there was only a small 2-week period in which she could have lost her job and the income had to change during that 2-week period. Otherwise, under Rivero, we can't consider it. The hearing master couldn't consider it.
Correct, because at least for this appeal, which is what we're talking about here, which is the March 29th, 23 order on appeal. That is correct.
So there would be a period of time where the district court, the hearing master never heard a single shred of evidence about her job situation. And there's sort of a dead period where stuff can happen. And if it happens during that dead period, too bad, so sad.
Now, if something happened during that dead period, then she would have came to the hearing and then presented evidence about what happened within that period. But the time that she was talking about when she lost her job, COVID, which was actually 2 years earlier, because we're talking 2022 now, happened before the order that was on review and modification that we're talking about right now. And the review and modification has to be on the last order, and the evidence has to come from that last order.
Well, that's the time. Thank you, Ms. Stark, very much.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Nobrega, the rebuttal, and if you could address that question first, whether the loss of job is a factor, a factual piece of evidence presented at the February 2023 hearing.
Yes, the fact that she lost her job was considered at the 2023 hearing, certainly. The rule that my colleague stated, I guess, that's not really the way the rule works. So it's not based on each denial of a motion for modification that you judge whether there's been a change in circumstances. It's from the order that sets the child support amount. Okay, so it's got to be from that order that sets the child support amount. And this is just kind of a logical, you know, rule, because it's a 20% change in income, right? So you could have a situation where if someone's filing a motion to modify after a motion to modify and they're having 5% changes of income each time, they could never have their modification because of the order in which they filed their motions to modify and those denials. But I just want to touch briefly on 425. So NRS Chapter 425 is about representing, and if I could just briefly conclude, Your Honor, NRS Chapter 425 is designed for pro se litigants. So Your Honor's correct. What happened here was a punishment to Ms. Bachman for repetitive motions or for, you know, not providing picture perfect evidence that she would never have because she's an unsophisticated party who's filing motions on her own. If the rule is established by the frustration of the district court judge with the appellant and imposing a sanction on them, child support in this state is going to be way more dependent upon the actions of pro se litigants acting perfectly and in line with, you know, the decorum of the court that they don't entirely understand. So the standard that we're holding Ms. Bachman to is too high as a self-represented litigant.
Well, that's why the DA's office is involved to help collect the child support.
Exactly, Your Honor. And that's why the DA's office said there's 14 exhibits I have here and there's been a change in circumstance. I think there's been a change in circumstances. So with that, Your Honor, I would ask that the district court be reversed. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.